from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. To get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Then, when you're driving to work, from work, or around town, all you have to do is tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball, and we'll be right there with you for the drive. If your company wants to reach an upscale male audience, then your ad should be running right here on this podcast. To get your company connected with this audience, email locked@lockedonpodcasts.com to get more details about increasing your business. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk about these three games against the Cardinals over the weekend. The Giants losing on Friday, but then winning on Saturday and Sunday. The unofficial first half is officially over. Giants will not play again until Friday. They finished out the first half going 6-1, and since June 1st, they went 19-14 with a plus 19 run differential. So there's so much to talk about. Really want to do some first half recapping, but that's probably going to come up in future episodes the rest of the week, because we will continue to have daily episodes even though the Giants won't be playing this week. So with the series win over the Cardinals, the Giants improved overall in the season to 41-48, still 17.5 games back in the West. They're just 5.5 back of a wild card spot, but again, there's only two teams now behind them. The Mets did fall behind the Giants in the standings. The Giants have a minus 70 run differential on the season. That's still the second worst in the National League. But the fact is, and it's plain as day, they're playing much better. And it's not just, you know, this a disappointing group got hot and then it's kind of a fluky thing that we'll never see again. Like the 2017 or the 2018 Giants having a hot stretch. It's different than that, and it's different for multiple reasons. The first reason it's different is that clearly the people in charge have a plan and a direction for this team. We're seeing platoons implemented more and more, and they're becoming more and more effective as they're able to target specific players that they like. Literally heard Bruce Bochy say in an interview a couple days ago that Farhan Zaidi was targeting Alex Dickerson for a long time. It was after that win, that sweep in San Diego. I think there was a San Diego reporter interviewing Bochy after the game, asking him about Dickerson, because obviously they're seeing that he's going off here for the Giants and they just traded him away. So they have questions about that. And Bochy revealed that Dickerson was a guy Farhan had been talking about for a long time. And so this just totally supports what I've been saying all along, that they have their targets and it's just a matter of when do they strike to make that deal? When do the Padres decide that he is expendable to them? But the fact is, the front office knows exactly what type of player they have their eye on, who are guys they would want to acquire, and they're just waiting for those opportunities to become available. I think the exact same thing happened with Tyler Austin and Kevin Pillar, and there's probably dozens more players out there right now who the Giants would love to acquire and are just waiting for that right moment to make such a trade. It's also a huge positive that they're not just overpaying for these guys. They're waiting to buy low when they're available. Probably could have had Kevin Pillar in the offseason if they would have given up whatever the Blue Jays were wanting. But then the Blue Jays got in a bit of a roster crunch. They had some young guys they wanted to play, and so Pillar became expendable to them, and the Giants were able to get him for minimal cost. Same with Tyler Austin. And really, same with Alex Dickerson. And Dickerson specifically, you know, we're going to talk sometime this week about the biggest positives from the entire first half. And I honestly think Dickerson may be very, very high on that list, even though he's only played for a few weeks now. But he just continued the hot hitting over the weekend against the Cardinals. On Friday, he went 2-for-4 with a home run, a missile to right field. He has hit so many balls that are missiles. Like, he's consistently hitting the ball over 110 miles an hour, which is just elite contact. On Saturday, he went 1-for-3 and hit a triple that was 111 miles an hour against a left-handed pitcher into Triple's alley. And then yesterday, the Giants were getting shut down by Jack Flaherty, but Dickerson was the first base runner of the game. He drew a walk, and then he ended up getting a single. So in the game, he went 1-for-2 with a walk. So even in a day where they were completely shut down, he and Longoria, who hit a home run, were the only guys to have a positive game offensively. So for the season, it's a tiny sample, so we're just reporting a fact as opposed to reading into it too much. But he's now hitting .303, .370 on base, .606 slugging. It's a .303 ISO, which is just elite level power. Obviously, don't expect that to continue at that level. But for his career now, across 123 games, 366 trips to the plate between the Giants and the Padres, he's been almost 20% above average offensively, hitting .266, .339 on base, .480 slugging. And if we look specifically against righties, it just keeps going up. It's always been good, and it just keeps getting better. But his career numbers against righties now, he's been about 25% above average, with a .347 on base and a .510 slugging in about 300 plate appearances. Also a 10% walk rate and just an 18% strikeout rate. I really have a hard time looking at these numbers and saying that he's not just a quality major league hitter. It's hard to see that. And in fact, the historically conservative projection systems are buying into Alex Dickerson as well. Steamer, which is one of the main projection systems out there publicly and one of just a few prominently featured on Fangraphs, now buys into Dickerson as being 13% above average offensively for the rest of the season, hitting .281 with a .350 on base and .464 slugging. And that number has just kept going up and up. So the more he continues to perform, the higher that number is going to go. So that's like a conservative projection that he's more than 10% above average offensively, which is, trust me, the Giants do not, it's been a while since they've rolled out a new player who had this kind of an offensive projection. Mike Yastrzemski, Austin Slater, even with what Slater is doing, they're still projected to be below average offensively. Steamer also does this like 600 plate appearance projection, kind of extrapolating out the performance over a full season. So over 600 plate appearances, that projection for Dickerson is a 2-WAR season, which is an average regular at the major league level, which is a good thing to be an average regular. It's like a starting caliber player. Replacement level is not the same as an average regular. Replacement level is 0 wins above replacement, and Dickerson is projected at 2 over 600 plate appearances with 18 home runs and 29 doubles. Essentially, they project him as their second best hitter right now behind only Brandon Belt, ahead of Posey and ahead of everybody else. So anyway, also in this game on Friday, Brandon Belt was in left field with Pablo Sandoval at first. Dickerson was in right. So Yastrzemski didn't start, and Yastrzemski also didn't start against a righty on Sunday. All three games were started by righties for the Cardinals, and Yastrzemski only played in one of them. So I've kind of seen the same thing. He's playing his way out of opportunity a little bit, just a lot of swings and misses. And the numbers have fallen to below average. Just having a hard time getting on base enough and striking out a little too much. Not really seeing how he's going to be able to get to being above average unless he hits for more power, strikes out less, or walks more. I mean, it's hard to do. Strikeout rate and walk rate tend to stabilize pretty quickly. So it's not like what we've been seeing in terms of strikeouts and walks is some kind of fluky thing with him. It's probably generally what his talent level is. And then his average on balls in play doesn't look weird either. It's at .304. And so even when you combine all that, he's still been about 15% below average offensively. So that's a position where they may at some point want to make an upgrade at some point in the relatively near future, I should say. But again, he does have minor league options, of course. And so you don't have to lose Mike Yastrzemski just because you want to upgrade at a position. So Austin Slater actually started yesterday. It's possible that they don't view Slater as someone who they're going to put into a platoon, but someone who deserves everyday looks in right field. I don't know. But when we say that we're optimistic about, you know, what the outfield has become, we're not saying they're done. Let's just call it a day. And this is the team that's going to try to compete for a championship. Of course not. It's about a better process. That's the main reason for optimism. And then actually finding some guys who could help out down the road. And so I think the process is what invites in all that optimism. And then someone like Dickerson specifically, you point to as a guy who really could be here for some duration of time, not just the rest of the season necessarily. He is a little bit older, Dickerson. But the point is, even already, if the Giants wanted to trade him right now, I would be almost certain that they could get something better than what they gave up to get him. So it's already a win for the Giants. Coming up in the next half of the show, we'll talk a little more about these actual games. Madison Bumgarner drilled in the pitching arm, but expected to be fine. We'll talk about that, talk about where he stands in terms of his trade value with the trading deadline really coming up soon here at the end of the month. We'll talk about Jeff Samardzija's outing yesterday. Just kind of wrapping things up as we close out the first half and previewing the upcoming week when we're going to get into some larger topic conversations. Okay, so as promised, we'll talk about these games a little bit and Madison Bumgarner, Jeff Samardzija, trade value, where the Giants stand in terms of making trades potentially, and then previewing this upcoming week with podcasts, even though the Giants won't be playing. So on Saturday, Madison Bumgarner was drilled in the throwing arm just above the elbow with a line drive in the first inning off the bat of Jose Martinez. It was hit like 98 miles an hour. He had enormous swelling. It looked like there was a golf ball or a tennis ball there under his skin. Amazing. He didn't like react at all. He just kind of watched the ball. Where did it go? Didn't rub it. Didn't look like he was in pain at all. I mean, he definitely was in pain, but he wasn't showing it. Trainers come out. Bochy comes out. He stays in the game, but then he goes a couple innings, has an at-bat, and then they pull him out of the game. I'm sure it was extremely painful, but that's the thing about Bumgarner is he is not going to let you have any kind of advantage over him, even if that advantage is knowing that he's hurt. He's about as mentally tough of a person you'll ever see on a baseball field. He's been better lately in terms of performance on the field. And just looking above average, but not too much above average across the board. Strikeout to walk ratio is fantastic. 25% strikeouts, 5% walks. His kind of one Achilles heel is that he's allowing more home runs than you would like. He's already allowed 17 home runs. Generally, a league average rate, the home run is obviously up across all of baseball. So it's not like he's on an island there just allowing a crazy amount of home runs, but you'd like your really good pitchers and your above average pitchers to be above average at preventing home runs, but he hasn't really been able to do so. And if you're a contender, you probably worry about how he's going to pitch in your park when he's giving up a fair share of homers at Oracle Park, the least homer-friendly park in all of baseball. But the velocity is back up. He's only 29 years old. He's thrown a heck of a lot of pitches in his career, and he's going to turn 30 on August 1st. But still, he's a rental. I think at the end of the day, you do give additional points to him if you're comparing him to someone else and their numbers are exactly the same. If you're a team interested in a starter, I think you do prefer Madison Bumgarner because of the track record and because of the mentality. And if you're a team like the Twins, who's just kind of doesn't have a lot of playoff experience between them, probably going to make the postseason, very well could find themselves in a series against the Astros or the Yankees. I think you want some of that mentality, somebody who's proven, who's been there before. I don't think you're going to pay double what you would otherwise pay, but I do think it plays a role. And he's just not going to be phased. I mean, he's just not going to be phased by any kind of situation. And it's certainly that something that can happen if you've never been in that situation and you just kind of are someone who's not as mentally tough. It can get to you. We've seen it before. So I do think he has value. Luckily, he escaped that line drive without serious injury. And they're strategically planning to have him start the second game after the All-Star break so that he can avoid that series at Coors Field, which is smart. They don't want his numbers to get inflated or to look bad as he's scouted in a start at Coors Field. Very logical thing for the Giants to do there, and good to see that they're doing it. So after Bumgarner left, Sam Dyson came in and pitched two scoreless innings with two strikeouts, one hit allowed. He just continues to have a phenomenal season, and he's controllable for one more year after 2019 via arbitration, probably for a reasonable price of around $5 million. So if I'm a contender, I am all over Sam Dyson as well, especially for his ability to limit home runs in this environment, get a double play, and he can strike you out, and he's not walking people. So just a lot of value to me for Sam Dyson. And huge tip of the hat to the old Giants front office for picking him up when his stock was so low in Texas. He was really good for Texas, and then he fell apart for like a month to open the 2017 season, and they cut him loose. And this is exactly the type of move that you want to make if you're trying to rebuild your team, is to buy low on guys like Sam Dyson, and it's totally worked out, and they should be able to get something much more than what they gave up to get him. Tony Watson struggled again in his inning, automatically just going to him in the eighth inning. It was a big lead. It was 8-1 in the eighth, and he ended up giving up three runs, three-run homer to Goldschmidt. I just think it's risky, and sooner or later, you're going to come in. He's going to come in a one-run game with a bunch of righties coming up, and it's going to be trouble. Hasn't really totally cost them yet, but I do think they should mix and match him a little more. I think Dyson deserves to pitch in those high-leverage eighth innings if there's a bunch of righties up, and go to Watson if it's like two lefties and a righty, and the righty is not some enormous threat. So lastly, on Sunday, Jeff Samardzija, 7 innings, no runs, no walks, 4 hits, only 2 strikeouts. But still, a very good outing for him. He was really, really reeling for a while there, and then his last 2 outings have been very good. So all told on the season, for the first half, he's got a 4.01 ERA, but peripheral still up there, 4.5, fielding independent pitching, xFIP, up around 5. So I would still expect the ERA to jump up to around 4.5, but the last couple outings, he's been able to fight it off. Dyson again, scoreless inning with 3 strikeouts in the eighth. So there you go. He did get his eighth inning. Probably should have said that before I just said they should do that more. Longoria hit the home run in a 1-0 game, obviously the only scoring. Meant to talk more about Longoria today, but he's been hot with the home run ball. I'm going to look at his overall season numbers as opposed to just saying he's like fixed himself overall on the season. Now he's pulled himself to around league average, with a much improved walk rate, which is good to see for him. It was his biggest issue last year. Defense has been spectacular. So Longoria has been a valuable player for the Giants this season. The issue is his age, the fact that they're committed to him for 3 additional years after this season, and the fact that it's costing them about $15 million a year after you factor in what the Rays are paying. So it's kind of like fair price for the production they're currently getting. But at the same time, for a guy who's figuring to be in decline as he gets older and older, he's going to be 34 after the season. It's still not a good contract by any means, but the production has been okay if you look at the whole package, offense plus defense plus base running. So the Giants find themselves in a position where they're playing better, yet they probably should still be sellers. I mean, not even probably. I'm definitely going to say they should still be sellers, of course, especially for their rental pieces like Smith and Bumgarner. I think it would just be a huge mistake to hold on to them on the slim chance you might sneak into the second wildcard spot. And again, I'll say that's a slim chance. But I trust the front office. I trust Farhan Zaidi more than almost any other executive, if not any other executive in baseball, to make the right decisions and to make the right moves and to target the right players. So we'll talk more about their status as sellers, strategic buyers. They've talked about the possibility that they'll buy, but they're not going to buy rentals. They would only potentially sell some minor league depth for controllable players who help them in the present. And by controllable, I mean they'll be here multiple seasons. Kind of like, you know, the Kevin Pillar addition. It was an addition, but it didn't really cost them much in terms of long-term value necessarily. So anyway, so much more to get into this week. We'll talk about the highlights of the first half, the lowlights, top three, bottom three. We'll talk about the first half MVP for the Giants, least valuable player, biggest disappointment. We'll do all kinds of stuff like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. To get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider subscribing, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.